Welcome everyone to Jubilee Street, a music podcast. My name is Ian McCurtis. I'm joined with Jake Curtis. Via Jake Curtis, via Blue the Intern Dog, via Buffy the HR Dog.
And we CC Buffy and Blue on this email.
Today we're talking about Hallelujah by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds.
There was a podcast named Jubilee Street, a music podcast hosted by Jake and Ian.
So I do mine for content like I mine for Bitcoin.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
Ian, it feels great to be back in the Nick Cave pocket. Was that what you were going to say? Did I take the wind out of your sails?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done an episode. It's also been even longer since we've done a Nick Cave episode. So let's start off with, we have Nick Cave news to talk about.
We do?
Let's see. He said that he plans on making a Bad Seeds album this year.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that.
I did. Very exciting.
Any thoughts?
Okay. I haven't thought about it since I saw the news, because you're like the only person I know that I can talk to Nick Cave about, at least I know personally. I think it's exciting. I think, I thought that the album he did with Warren Ellis, Carnage, was great. I think Seven Psalms kind of turned me off a little bit, but that was outside of Bad Seeds territory. So I think I know it's silly and it's like a joke with us, but I hope that the album ends up being a double album. And I think it probably will be.
Who knows? I want to know what it's going to sound like. Yeah, I could see it being a double album. Why not?
I think it's going to be a return to like an old sound. I don't think they're going to continue with the stuff they were doing on Ghost Teen. That's why I think it's going to be like a double LP. I think that they'll get in the studio and they'll probably like just jam out on the Korg for a little while, and they'll get those sort of longer like Rings of Saturn type shit out of them. And then they'll be like, all right, let's bring some rock and roll back into the mix.
Yeah, I think whether that means Let Love In, whether that means Dig Lazarus Dig, whether that means something new, I definitely think it's going to be more rock oriented.
And I think given that there's been a lull since 2019. We're now about four years from Ghost Teen, right?
When did that come out did that come out in 2019 or 2018?
It's hard
for me to remember before COVID.
I think it was 2019. Let me check my smarticular phone.
I feel like that's about usually the gap between Bad Seeds albums, 4 years.
I've got my smarticular phone here. I'm going to check for us. But I believe you want to put your money on 2019 or 2018?
I think 2019.
2019, yeah. Because the Idiot Prayer Live album came out in 2020. And God, that does not feel very long ago, but it was 3 years ago. Crazy. If you're interested in hearing our coverage about that, I think we have pod audio that's on our podcast link, yeah. Right, for that? Yeah, we did a whole thing about the Idiot Prayer record. Yeah, so I think there'll be some conceptual, like, ambient shit in there, because I just think that's what they want to do now, and it bothers me a little bit, because those records, like, I saw, like, somebody on Reddit posted about Skeleton Tree, like, let's all talk about how Skeleton Tree's really not that sad, and I was like,
I think it's pretty fucking sad.
I'm like, it's a pretty sad album. Like, I think it was just some shit poster who wanted to rile up the comment section. I think we're due for, there's some real like emotional reckoning that Nick's been through, you know, in the last decade, you know, losing two children, getting older, living through a pandemic, probably losing a lot of money during the pandemic from not touring, because I don't think anyone in the bad seats necessarily is like struggling, but a lot of people in the music industry were struggling. And I don't think, I mean, they were selling equipment and merch and all kinds of stuff during that time, I think, to just to keep their band afloat. So all that is to say, I feel like they're going to be hungry to get in the studio and write. Nick kind of made a joke about it, like, oh, I guess I'm going to have to write it. But when they get in there, the juices will start flowing and it'll be good.
I think he's swerving everyone. I think this, the Red Hand Files are a bit of a swerve, how serious he is on there right now.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be funny. I think it's going to be a very funny and lighthearted album, at least at moments. I think we're going to get back to the funny Nick Cave.
Well, this is a good segue for something I had been thinking about that I wanted to ask you. When he posted that information about working on a new Bad Seeds record, I thought to myself, Kanye's pretty much lost to the world as like one of our like coveted rock stars at this point. So I was like, is Nick Cave one of the last like punk rock stars out there right now? Like the only other people that really come to mind are like David Byrne and like Iggy Pop just put out a new record. But
Susie Sue's coming back.
Susie, okay, so this is why I asked you, because I didn't necessarily think he was our last rock star, but it did make me start wondering, in our lifetime, I feel like there's going to reach a time where that era is completely gone before we die. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're all older than us, so as long as we live.
But what I'm saying is, like, I don't feel like the last 10 years has been an age of rock stars. I feel like that ended in the 90s and the early 2000s. What do you think? Thoughts?
Oh, no doubt. In this decade, I don't mean to be morbid, but we're going to probably lose everyone left from the 60s. Like, the last two Beatles, Bob Dylan, that era, Neil Young, like, all those people are in their 70s or 80s.
Yeah, Jesus.
We're probably going to see a lot of the legends die this decade, and then 2030s and 2040s, you're going to start to get the punk era people getting up there.
Well, RIP to David Crosby, because he passed away recently, too, and that was a blow.
Yeah, that walrus fucker.
What were you beefing with him on? Because he was too much of a
walrus
hippie?
Walrus mustache. I don't know anything about him. I know Phoebe Bridgers always like... would like go at him on Twitter, and it was funny to see them argue.
Yeah, I think he was kind of a polarizing figure in some circles. Great musician, though. Yeah, just some rambling thoughts about like rock stardom and that kind of thing. I do kind of feel like Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr are going to be the first people that have their heads encased, like in Futurama, and they will just continue to tour.
Could be.
Yeah.
So the second thing I wanted to ask about Nick Cave news.
NCN. Your
Red Hand Files news. I ended up seeing this on like Pitchfork, and then I ended up seeing on CNN. This kind of made the rounds. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever seen Nick Cave on CNN before. Mm-hmm. He did a Red Hand Files about ChatGPT. Did you see this?
I don't know what that is.
ChatGPT is that like AI program that's like crazy advanced.
Okay.
You know, you can ask it questions or... I mean, it's crazy. You haven't messed around with it?
No, I've only messed around with like Night Cafe and like art.
So this one's tech. So you could be like, write me an essay about how Nick Cave is
similar to... Oh, no, I know what you're talking about now. Like you can tell it's...
Write it in the style of Ta-Nehisi Coates and it'll do it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So someone had it write a Nick Cave song lyrics.
Oh, that's awesome. And
they sent it to the Red Hand Files, and Nick Cave wrote about ChatGPT, and he said the song was a piece of shit, and then it got picked up by like all these news outlets.
Oh my God, that's so funny. It's mind-boggling to me that Nick Cave goes viral like that, because he just... I have been trying to capture this idea for so long since we started this podcast, but it's like Nick Cave is at both times like... not famous and completely and utterly famous at the same time.
Yeah, he just gets more famous the longer we go on. Maybe it's because there's less and less rock stars. He moves up the ranks.
And not only that, but he is he is very game to go against that like expectation of like rock royalty, like the way that he messes with people on the Red Hand Files, and he's very interactive with his fan base. I think that's why his fan base is so dedicated to him, because he is so unique in that way.
To go back real quick to your rock star thought, I thought that we were at a moment, like, I don't know, the past like 10 years, I was like, there's not going to be any new rock stars. There haven't been. I genuinely think Phoebe Bridgers is one. The popularity of her, I always underestimate how popular she is. When Boy Genius announced their debut LP, like, I could not believe how many people were freaking out, and the kind of festivals she headlines. Mm-hmm. She's genuinely a rock star.
Yeah, she was on, I saw her recently on Chicken Shop Date with Amelia de Moldenberg. And she, as you know, she featured on the new SZA record. And I was kind of surprised by that, because it didn't seem like a great crossover. If you want to hear more about that, too. Check out our Jubies.
Corey told me they're friends.
How does Corey know that? Is he friends with them?
I don't know. I don't know if he follows them on social media or what, but he said that they were friends. So.
Well, he's not an authority, so I wouldn't believe anything
he didn't
he
seem
says.
Surprised by it.
Yeah. Okay, Corey. Yeah, you're like an authority on SZA's friendships now.
Well, he likes Phoebe Bridgers. He probably knows more about her than
you. Oh, he likes Phoebe Bridgers now. Okay.
Yeah.
Just so he can wear like a toboggan and a flannel shirt fit in at the punk shows. I get it.
Shout out to Phoebe Bridgers episode of Z-Way, which I would recommend people watch.
What's Z-Way?
You've never seen Z-Way before?
Don't talk to me like that. You don't even know what YouTube is.
Oh, okay. Z-Way, she has a talk show on Showtime, but you can watch the clips on YouTube. And she just like gets these celebrities in and just makes them so uncomfortable. Like just asks them the most like baits them into saying racist things.
Oh, okay.
Stuff they'll get canceled for. And she's so, oh my God. Look, like, make a note to look her up. Z-Way, Z-I-W-E.
I will. I love stuff like that. Thank you for telling me.
An amazing interviewer. She's great. Best one in the game right now. Best talk show host.
So, let's get
in. I would love to go on there, Z-Way, if you're listening.
Hey, Z-Way. At Jubilee Street Pod on Instagram if you want to follow us.
I would have so much anxiety. There's an episode where, do you know Adam Pally?
No.
He's like this,
Is he a wrestler?
He's kind of like nervous Jewish comedian. There's an episode where he goes on there and he's having a panic attack, I feel like, and that would be me.
That's awesome. All right, well, let's get to the song of the hour, Hallelujah, from No More Shall We Fart.
I guess we can't start without talking about the more famous Hallelujah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the classic song, I guess the most famous version being Jeff Buckley, right?
Yeah, who just passed away recently, didn't he?
No way.
I think Jeff Buckley passed away. Or no. It was Jeff Beck.
Oh, yeah, Jeff Beck. Yeah, never listened to him, really.
Didn't know much
about
him.
Song by Leonard Cohen, covered by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people, I feel like it's lumped in with, like, that John Lennon Imagine song, like, one of these, like, beautiful songs everyone comes together and loves. And it's never hit me the way it hits a lot of people. I think that Hallelujah song's whatever.
But this one.
This one I love. The Hallelujah song always makes me think of, because Courtney's always watching Grey's Anatomy, and I feel like they always play music like that in Grey's Anatomy.
It makes me think, I don't know if it's actually in Shrek, but it makes me think of Shrek.
Yeah.
In fact, Cave's
also in
Shrek. You know what? I'm pretty certain Hallelujah is in Shrek 1, because like, there's like a whole montage sequence near the end of the movie where everybody looks sad and the gingerbread boy has his legs cut off and shit like that.
Shout out Puss in Boots sitting at like 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Dude, people fucking love that movie.
I know. It might be the next Paddington 2.
You're telling me. I just want to see Paddington fucking fake out John Cena.
Yeah, that was... I don't know why that picture was made in Photoshop, but I loved it.
I thought you were sending me a screenshot of the event, so I did not know it was fake until this moment.
Oh, no, it was just something I saw online. It was just really funny.
Okay, this is a total tangent, so sorry to the listeners. I'll keep it short. My thinking was like, because Ian's really into pro wrestling and stuff and WWE and Raw and whatnot. I'm not going to claim to keep it all straight. My thing was that...
Not into WWE.
You know, there was a British thing where they did Fighting for My Family, and I was like, oh, maybe there's like a British connection, because when Paddington showed up in that screenshot you sent me, I was like, oh my God, they're going to do some kind of VR wrestling match with like John Cena and Paddington, which is not unbelievable.
John Cena doesn't wrestle anymore. I think there's a better chance of getting Paddington.
Plus, homeboy from Banshees of Inisherin could show up in his pink prisoner outfit from Paddington 2 and definitely wrestle John Cena.
There might be some insurance issues with how old that guy is, but yeah.
Banshees of Inisherin. That would be an SNL skit.
Banshees of Inisherin.
Yeah. SNL definitely is listening to this podcast and stole that idea from me. You're not going to get the Banshees of Inisherin unless you've got life insurance.
Dude, that's good. I hope SNL does that. I'm going to send some messages to the writers.
Yeah.
Banshees of Inisherin. That's got to be a sketch. If it wins like Best Picture, it's got to be a sketch.
I mean, there's also a good... I'm not going to ruin my hot streak now, but there's also... There would be a good crossover and like sort of nostalgia factor if you could make Without a Paddington 3, which is like Without a Paddle sequel, but it's Paddington with like Dax Shepard and all those guys, Seth Green.
Banshees of Martin Lawrence.
There you go. So anyway, Hallelujah. You're a big fan. Leonard Cohen, Shrek.
No, not a big fan of that song. Big fan of this, the Nick Cave, Hallelujah.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and give myself a pat on the back here. I was going through, we talked before winter break, essentially, because we had a little bit of a break after we recorded the Modest Mouse episode. And I was like, let's both pick a couple of B-side songs. And then I was like, you know what? We've done a good amount of these. I don't feel like a lot of them are mineable for a lot of good content at the moment. I was like, maybe we can just pick two and lump them into one episode. And then I was like, wait.
I say good conversation. Jake says mining for content.
And, you know, I just want the podcast to succeed. So I do mine for content like I mine for Bitcoin. And I was like, wait, we haven't done anything from No More Shall We Part in a long time. So I go through the track list and I throw on a couple songs and I'm like, all right, Ian, you want to do Hallelujah or Love Letter? And he's like, well, butter me up.
Let's do them
and
both.
Put me in the oven. Let's do them both. So we're doing Hallelujah. That's the story behind it. And I got to say, No More Shall We Part was like a warm hug coming back to listening to that album. And I think that it's one of the best Bad Seeds records.
Agreed. And a great winter album. And this made me think of last week on the Lonesome Crowded West episode when you talked about those Modest Mouse songs being like 7 minutes but not feeling that long. This song's like 8 minutes long. It doesn't feel all that long.
I literally have never looked at the runtime. I just put it on and I lose myself in it. I'm humming along to it, singing to it. I want to, before I lose my train of thought here, why do you say it's a winter album?
I think because there's like, this is the only Bad Seeds album that I think has like a jazzy quality.
Uh-huh. That's
there's
good.
Jazzy. It sounds like there's a lot of stand-up bass on it. I don't know if there is or not. This song is pretty much stand-up bass and violin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, jazz just makes me think of like a small restaurant, snowing outside. There's like a fireplace and just listening. I don't know, just... This album makes me think of winter.
Yeah. I had the same thought. That's why I asked
There's songs, you know, there's 15 feet of pure white snow. There's songs about, like, fires, and it just has a lot of winter imagery.
So it makes me think a lot of a scene from one of my favorite movies, Climax, directed by Gaspar Noé. And the... Basically, the story of Climax is that a bunch of dancers get called to go on a tour, like a dance tour. And they are all meeting up at this gymnasium the night before and they start partying. Someone spikes the punch and then it's a Gaspar Noé movie, so it's kind of fucked up. And basically, things go haywire. But there's a scene in the movie where one of the people runs out of the gymnasium into the snow. And I just kept picturing that scene while I was listening to this song. And that's why I was curious why you thought it was a winter record, because it also feels very wintry to me. And I do think that 15 feet of pure white snow definitely peppers that feeling into my mind.
And this song, you got mentions of hot cocoa and a vicious wind. Mm-hmm. And it definitely feels like it's winter time in this song. I think my favorite thing about this song, which I wish the Bad Seeds did more, but they don't because Nick Cave is generally the only singer. I love a song. This is a classic pop punk staple. Blink-182 does it a lot.
I know what you're about to say. I know what you're about to say.
The last chorus where you add in a second vocalist doing a counter melody on the last chorus.
Yeah.
And they bring in that female vocalist. I don't have her name. I looked it up earlier. The last chorus comes in. She starts doing that counter melody.
Is it Kate and Anna McGarrigle?
That sounds right. That's one of my favorite things in music is hitting that last chorus and then a second vocalist comes in doing a different melody. It's just like candy to me. I love it.
I think one of the things that the Bad Seeds have the backbone to do is make a song named Hallelujah in a time where, you know, the Leonard Cohen track just, it's just so synonymous with like Grey's Anatomy kind of shit. Like, it's just always that, it's that thing. And I think it was cool.
Probably a bit tongue in cheek because he's, you know, a huge Leonard Cohen fan. And mm-hmm. I'm sure he knew how iconic that song was.
Well, Nick Cave definitely champions the idea that, like, if nothing's original, steal from your idols and do it well. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that he isn't a unique artist on his own, but...
And between, like, loving Leonard Cohen and then loving, like, religious imagery, I'm sure it was very tantalizing to name a song Hallelujah.
Yeah, yeah. So my next question for you, Ian, is have you ever seen your piano cowering in the corner with its teeth bared?
I have not, but that reminds me of another scene from a movie that's probably not as critically loved, although done by a very good director, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Are you trolling me? Because that's like the best movie.
It is the best movie. And what's his name? Alfonso Cuarón did it.
Cuarón.
The freaking book they get, the Care of Magical Creatures book, how it mm-hmm. has the teeth and the book's like biting.
Mm-hmm.
The piano line reminds me of that.
Well, I don't know
the
if...
The book crawling across the bed trying to bite Harry.
When you were at the Universal Studios in Orlando, did you see the book in the cage? I think one of the shops has it as
I
like
did,
a...
Yeah.
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 Very cool. Similar image, at least nostalgically... I don't think you've played Mario 64, but when you get into the level, there's like, it's so, I've been watching speed runs of that game while I work. Cause I don't know. I find it oddly relaxing. And there's such a good level. It's not in the speed runs cause they skip through it. But in that game where you have to jump through a boo and it ends up opening up this little toy box, like a music box. And then you jump in and it's like a mansion. And then for those who've played Mario, you know that almost all the games always have like a Boo haunted mansion level. So anyway, that's all to say there's a piano in the mansion that when you get too close to it, it starts moving around and making these like janky piano noises. And it's got these really sharp teeth. And it's so scary every time it happens. That level is really frightening. That's what I thought of though.
Beautiful imagery of like, this seems very much just a song about like going through withdrawal, going through rehab and him sitting there, not able to make art. And the piano's like menacing, you know, laughing in his face almost.
I know this is silly, but did you notice the line? I passed a cow and the cow was brown.
Yeah.
Is that some kind of play on like someone sitting at their typewriter, like reading and hearing like old nursery rhymes in their head while they try to get ideas? And like, it's like, there's that one Animal Collective song where it's like a chorus and it's like, how now brown cow? And I'm
Anchorman.
Lanolin. And
oh my god, great reference by Jake Curtis.
And there's There. So I don't know. I thought it was nothing at
first.
One
of my favorite movies of all time.
And then I... attention, news team. I have a very important announcement.
Oh, I'm due for a rewatch.
Anyway, that's all to say, I viewed it completely different from just an innocuous line because I was like, oh, this is him like walking around the grounds. He forgot his coat. The nurses don't know he's left. And mm-hmm. he's like practicing lines that he can like get down in his notebook. And it's I think it's easy to say that it's some Nick Cave songs are very cinematic. This one is one of those songs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it feels like he's like there's a movie in his head and the song is just like telling you one of the scenes. The cow line. I think you're right. I think that like everything in the song can be read multiple ways. I take it as I don't know what the word is. There's like a method for it in therapy when, you know, you're freaking out, say you're having a panic attack or your mind's racing and you just like they tell you to just like look at what's around you. Okay, there's a wall. What color is the wall? It's blue. What's above it? A ceiling. What color is the ceiling? It's white. What's next to the ceiling? A light. Is the light on? Or, you know, you just like focus on your surroundings, simple things.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's called, but that's what it makes me think he like left, you know, wherever he's supposed to be and he's like panicking and he's just, okay, there's a cow. The cow's brown. Like he's just like making his mind focus on simple things.
Yeah, he's trying to, and he ends up sort of creating these like he's trying to create these like analogies and similes and metaphors and stuff that I just took it as like somebody who's like desperate for the light to come on. And no matter what you do, it just, the oven won't turn on.
Hmm. Yeah. And the liberals want to take away our gas ovens, our gas stoves.
They already took away my M&Ms and now they're taking away my ovens.
Oh God. RIP to the M&Ms. That's how we should have led the podcast with that.
Yeah. I can't wait for the surprise ad where Maya Rudolph turns back into an M&M and then they're like, ah, you know, like they're like flipping off Fox News. I just don't know why they would even do that. Like Fox was probably sponsored by M&Ms to do that. They probably made so much more money on M&Ms.
Yeah, that's the conspiracy, is that it's all leading to a Super Bowl commercial or something.
That'd be so cool. No matter how stupid it is that's what Tucker Carlson is talking about.
That's what our cultural conversation is in 2023 is M&Ms.
Yeah, not the fact that like I'm not going to
make the green M&M horny again.
I think that this song continues very much so in the sense of paranoia that even like God is in the House, which I don't view as like a paranoid or like scary song in the way that I view this song in kind of a scary way.
But it's cynical. You like religious assholes.
It feels very, and you know, at this point, it's redundant to say 15 feet of pure white snow is scary at all because it's literally an image of getting buried under so much cocaine that you overdose. And at least that's what I always think of when I hear it. So that's all to say that, like, the idea of my typewriter has become mute as a tomb. Like, this is the ultimate embodiment of an artist's greatest fear. The well running dry.
And it's that thing that artists who have drug problems, it's their fear, is if they get clean, they won't be able to create anymore.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I remember really latching on to that idea in my early mid-20s. And it wasn't until I read this book about David Lynch that I had completely shifted my perspective in that you don't have to be tortured and high and drunk all the time to be good at what you do. It just can help sometimes and for some people.
What makes this song work, I think, past the surface level is that, you know, I take this song as a like magical realism kind of thing. Like he's talking about his experience with coming clean. I don't know, you know, I don't think all these details are real. I don't know if he actually had a nurse or was in a facility and, you know, all this stuff, the running away. But there's the story about that. But it also just makes me think of being a kid, just like, you know, getting away from the cover of your parents, like going out on your own and that being scary. And it also I mean, it's a good metaphor for anything where you step outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
you know, he's stepping away from the comfort of his nurse who has hot meals and hot chocolate and a warm bed, and he runs away, but then he like, he comes upon this woman and he's kind of like, I think I'm going to go back home, you know?
Yeah.
He almost gets to like a new life, a new thing. And he's like, I'm going to go back to the safety.
Or is the woman, some kind of trigger for him? Was, you know, is sex part of his addiction? Is, was, you know, did he love somebody who did drugs and he's getting clean because something happened with that? Something like that, maybe. Maybe she was a reminder.
Yeah, I think the woman is like a metaphor for, yeah, any sort of like trigger vice that might.
Which I think is a little problematic if you're looking at it from like a feminist angle, but I think it's relatively innocuous in the sense of the song.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to remember this guy's very like, he comes from the tradition of like classic literature and
romantics.
Femininity is like oftentimes a metaphor for temptation and, yeah, lust.
You know what's interesting is to go off what you're saying, the first line of the song is, on the first day of May I took to the road, been staring out the window most of the morning. And then he ends that verse by saying, or stanza, I should have taken it as a warning. And it's interesting because in almost any poem that you've ever read in your fucking entire life that talks about spring, May is like, you know, April showers bring May flowers. And it's like May is an invitation to go outside, go see some live music outside, go drink on a patio, go like out and do something, go get sunshine, you know? And in this song, it's like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to stay in.
Is the, I'm not trying to, whatever the opposite of yes and is, you, but is that even a thing in England where isn't it just rainy all the time?
Well,
maybe April showers bring May flowers is an American thing.
I can only pepper through like my experience, but that's a good point. Or not pepper it. I want to say pepper a lot
salt.
Tonight. I want to salt it through my own. I'm always able to see it through my own experience, but I think you're on to something.
Quick tangent, quick cosine here. Do you know what paprika is made out of? I just learned this last night.
No, I want to know.
Okay. I always thought paprika was like a plant, like black pepper, you know? Paprika is dried red peppers.
Oh, that would make sense.
I had no idea. Never
that's why
that.
It's like smoky and sweet, right?
But that's Ian's Spice Corner.
I found out an interesting fact about cocaine hippos, so I'm learning all kinds of random facts recently.
Cocaine hippos?
Yeah, so
I
watched something earlier, like before that we recorded. So when Pablo Escobar was doing his thing down in Colombia, I guess if I understand it correctly, he imported hippos, and I am imagining that either he kept them as pets or they were used as some kind of mule. I don't think that happened because hippos are incredibly aggressive. You'd have to like tranquilize it. Basically though, when he got arrested and his estate was given up, which is also insane because like there's like theme parks in Colombia dedicated to him. His hippos got put out into the wild and they're menaces. And so there's like this whole thing in Colombia about them wanting to, they're trying to find ways to sterilize the population because no one wants to kill the hippos, but they're just breeding. And apparently their poop is especially toxic and there's no predators there to take them out. So the only thing that can be done is human intervention to like even out the ecological system. So anyway, it's not as interesting as paprika, but I found it pretty fascinating.
Paprika.
You said paprika earlier.
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
Check if you'd look at the screen real quick.
Now, are you a fan of hippos? Do you like them as animals?
I have no feelings on it. I mean, hippos are cool. They're not like one of my favorite animals or anything, but
okay,
they're cool.
Okay. All right.
I had no idea about any of that. That's fucking crazy.
It's really interesting, isn't it? It's completely unrelated to Nick Cave, but I guess in the sense that it's cocaine. Eh? Eh? A little bit of connection cocaine, there.
You know, you might say elephants are, I mean, hippos are the elephant of the sea, and there's White Elephant, the song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Got all the Nick Cave connections, okay?
We can make some Nick Cave connections.
So, what else is there to say about the song, Ian? What else you got?
I let's just shout out the musicianship, the violin and the bass. Like,
thank you.
That's all you need. It's a great bass line. It's beautiful violin playing. There's some light drums. There's some light other stuff going on, but this just has a cool vibe. That's, I mean, this whole album, you know, a lot of these songs don't sound like anything else in the catalog, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah, I'm sure I've said this in a past episode, or maybe it's just grown on me, but I love the artwork on this album. I think it's one of the best Bad Seeds covers.
Yeah, I like it. It's, you know, a lot of people from this post-punk era do floral artwork and have done floral artwork. It's not a new idea, but just the font, the like typewritery font of No More Shall We Part, how it's like framed, the flowers on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just cool. It just looks very memorable.
Well, it makes you think No More Shall We Part, and then if there's a flower and it's kind of a dark background, like it could be someone's put a flower in their hair and, you know, something like that. Who knows?
And it's like ambiguous. It's like, are we getting married and we're saying No More Shall We Part, or is this like your funeral and I'm saying No More Shall We Part, like always remember you? Like, is it sad or is it happy? I don't know. Couldn't you see Bad Bad Not Good like doing a cool remix of this? It just feels like you could do like a really cool jazzy hip hop remix of this song.
So is someone dying here, or is someone jubilant about surviving something, or both?
In this song?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if this song is about, yeah, I don't know if it's like I'm gonna get through this thing, or if it's sadness, because the end of the song where the female vocal comes in is, I mean, that's definitely sad. The tears are welling in my eyes again. I need 20 big buckets to catch them in. Or is it hallelujah, like I'm feeling emotion again? Like, maybe I was feeling very, like, I was feeling no emotion through my withdrawal. Like, I wasn't able to feel anything, and now emotions are coming back. I don't know.
I'm just being silent because I'm thinking about it. What if this person has died, and this is a ghost? My pajamas clung to me like a shroud, would be my first guess, that they're already dead.
Again, I think you can read this, you know, you can read that as just weight loss from the treatment, from whatever they're going through.
She would never, or, in a thousand years, yeah, permit me to accept that invitation. Could be like a ghost overlooking like a grave. The little house might be some kind of mausoleum, you know?
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there is a metaphor, an intentional one, for the woman extending the invitation. I think the invitation being death.
Yeah. And then,
So yeah, it could be like suicide, and then he thinks about his nurse and decides to go back home.
I need 20 big buckets to catch them in, 20 pretty girls to carry them down, 20 deep holes to bury them in. So, you know, there's something being buried, whether it's a body or an idea. I think I'm basically saying the same thing with those two. But there's definitely an emphasis on like the 20 pretty girls. So it's like, you know, I'm interested to see where that kind of femininity trigger, like, is fitting in with the creative process. That this song feels a lot to me like someone who's afraid of losing their creativity, and the woman is, in this case, is symbolic of like a place of refuge, but ultimately a place of like, if like, how are you willing to risk that kind of safety for what you might lose? Maybe. Again, I don't really like the sound of that. It feels problematic, but I'm just kind of spitballing.
Your death metaphor is also, it works with the woman at the end, because a lot of times classically death has been portrayed as like a beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm. But then the nurse, who's alluded to being female as well, is you know, not allowing things, not letting things happen. Yeah,
what the fuck, nurse?
But then she's also like, he's also trying.
But she's got that hot chocolate.
He's trying to get rid of the nurse. So I feel like all the hot chocolate in the world, he doesn't care. He's escaping something. You know, that little house, the salutation, like there's something in the outside world and he knows it's not good for him, but he keeps wanting to go back out there and do it. I hate how on the nose an addiction is to this, but I feel like that's what it's about at the end of the day. But it could be a couple of different things.
No, I think it is about that, but I think what makes it a great song is that it could also be about anything in your life where you like step outside of your comfort zone.
So
how does this nurse make her hot chocolate? What do you think it tastes like? What do you think? How's she preparing it?
Well, I'm getting kind of it feels more like a 60s vibe in the song. But I guess I imagine she's probably taking some of those little circles of Abuelita chocolate and then she's melting it down.
I watched a video on this kind of hot chocolate the other day. Mexican hot chocolate?
Yeah, I think she's taking... It doesn't... Maybe not Mexican hot chocolate. I don't know what region they're in, but, you know... Let's say maybe the nurse is Mexican. Let's just do that. And she, you know, this is her chosen way of making it.
Let's say she's Brazilian. Nick spent some time in Brazil. All right.
That's better because it's connection to Nick Cave. So it's probably a little Abuelita chocolate. It's probably a little cinnamon.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit of nutmeg and cardamom in there. And you just melt that chocolate down, infuse the spices in there. You put a little cinnamon stick at the end. Maybe pour some hot milk on top. And put
almond
a couple
milk,
of
right almond would go with those spices.
For me, almond milk. For you, you know, full fat, whatever you like. And
I would do an almond milk with the cinnamon.
And I think that's done. I mean, when I worked at Please and Thank You, the way that we made hot chocolate there was they took I think they would come back and make it in the kitchen. And oh, you know what it was? I remember now. So we took Abuelita chocolate and sugar. And I think that's it. Because the Abuelita chocolate's already seasoned and spiced. Oh, cayenne pepper for sure. Put some cayenne pepper in there. You're in business, buddy.
I love hot chocolate.
Yeah.
But I prefer it. I prefer it with almond milk because it's already so rich.
Yeah.
It's almost like I don't really like avocado on a burger because I don't like fat on fat.
Yeah. And you might as well just put another piece of bacon on there at that point.
Yeah. I don't like bacon on a burger either.
Yeah.
So I don't really like full fat milk in my hot chocolate. I'd rather just have almond milk. It's like too much.
Yeah.
Ugh. I just want to enjoy the chocolate. The luscious dark chocolate.
I can't even think about drinking full fat milk, but I remember.
Oh, it would also hurt my stomach because I never drink milk.
It would
in the bathroom immediately.
You'd just be sitting with a lump in your stomach. But yeah, probably like you just put some sugar or maple syrup. You get the melted chocolate. You add your cayenne pepper, cinnamon, a little more like wintry spices, and then you put that cinnamon stick in there. Maybe get some marshmallows. You get a little blowtorch, melt the marshmallows a little bit on the top. That's why he can't leave the nurse, because she's making this great hot chocolate.
Marshmallows aren't vegan, right? Gelatin.
They have vegan marshmallows now, but they do have gelatin in them. If they're not vegan.
A fancy marshmallow like from a bakery. There's no. Oh my god. I want to learn how to make homemade marshmallow.
You know what, dude? I think it's pretty easy. I don't think you need too much.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. Were you ever like a marshmallow fluff kind of guy? Like make little like peanut butter marshmallow sandwiches?
I don't think I've ever had it.
I've never had it either. I don't know what it tastes like. It seems disgusting, but it might be good.
Yeah, I know that's a fluffer nutter. It's peanut butter and marshmallow fluff on a sandwich.
Yes.
But I've never had it.
Yeah, I think Christopher Moltisanti in The Sopranos,
what a reference to Full.
There's a moment where he asks his mom to make him something like that for breakfast, and he's just come home from like killing somebody. Great moment of the show.
Oh, that's a great writing. Something so childlike after taking someone's life.
Isn't that fucking crazy? That's why I love The Sopranos.
That's great.
Shit, I had one last idea here. Okay. Here's my last mission statement. This is my. When did we start this podcast? June 2020, something like that.
Yeah.
So we're nearing a 3-year anniversary. Not too far off.
Yeah.
Far off. Something that has always sort of bugged me and also fascinated me is that I am, as a deeply analytical, overthinking, overreading person, because that's literally what I got a degree in. When you get an English degree, you get an English degree because you like overthinking and imagining. I don't believe it is any other way. So what I've always sort of maligned about Nick Cave, or I maligned from the beginning, was that I never felt like the songs were deep. And I felt like I would spend all this time in our episodes like, this is what this is about, and this is what that's about. But I never felt like I nailed it. And it bothered me because I have put so much value in myself to, I want to understand how things are, and I want that understanding to be correct because I want to feel smart and intelligent. Now, that doesn't always happen. What I'm getting at is that I'm kind of realizing, and this is going to be obvious to a lot of people, I'm sure, that there are just songs that exist as good songs. And I feel like Nick Cave operates on writing really, really good songs with the bad seeds. And I think I just had that real epiphany that, like, it doesn't always matter if you know what's going on with the song. It just matters if you like it or not.
I think what you're doing is, I think the flaw is trying to look at music from your literature English brain.
Well, it's just how I've always been since I was a little kid.
Right.
I'm Googling everything. You know, I Googled today, like, I've been playing Majora's Mask on my 3DS in my spare time, like on a break at work. And there's all these little references to, like, characters that die in the children's game, essentially. So I'm always Googling, like, oh, this character's son, did they die? And that I've just always done that. So with Nick Cave, I want to do the same thing, but I feel like I've thrown that out the window finally. And I just come into the songs blank slate, just listening to it, enjoying it.
Well, with a video game, I think it's fine too. And here's what I mean is, think about the process. So if you're writing a novel, you're spending 1 year, 2 years, 5 years of your life on this piece of work. So yeah, you're going to embed all these meanings and themes into it. And as a reader, it's fun to try to figure all them out. But when you write a song, you might write a song in half an hour.
Yeah.
It's not nearly... The goal, I think, of a song is just to be evocative and let the listener figure out what it means. So a deep song doesn't do the same thing as a deep novel.
Yeah.
A song is deep when you can take 10 meanings from it, like we do with these Nick Cave songs.
Absolutely.
A novel's deep when there's all these, like, different themes, but it's just such a different amount of time spent on making it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's good. But then it makes me think, like, of Vianimo songs and songs that we used to write. And I'm just like, weren't these songs about something? Wasn't Latex about something? Rosary had a background. Like, there's like a story to these songs.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just that Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds aren't as forward about that kind of thing. There's not a lot of behind the scenes stuff with them. Like, everything that they've released that is sort of ancillary or connected to the band, that's not an album, like a documentary or something. It's like, you don't get a lot about who they are. You just sort of see them doing things.
It's just, I think you use different parts of your brain for these different things. So, like, well, let's say I want to be sweet towards you, Jake Curtis. And I'm like, I want to write a song about all our years of friendship and how you've grounded my life over all these years, these decades.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm writing a song, I'm going to think that thought and feel emotional, and I'm just going to try to get out of my brain's way and just put it down on paper. And not try to, like, get in my own way.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm writing a novel about that, that's way different. I'm going to analyze all these different moments we've had. It's just so much different. So much more analyzing goes into, like, longer forms of work. Whereas a song, you just want to figure out what you want to write the song about and then get out of the way.
We'll see it.
Well, see it.
We'll see it, Ian McCurtis. I was really trying to be sincere, and I stuttered. But seriously, well said. Well said. But
I want to move into a little plug here for Jake's YouTube channel called Curtis Reviews.
Curtis Reviews.
No space. Search that. It will pop up. He's done some great preview videos for 2023 on movies. Top five anticipated movies overall. Top five horror movies. He did a retrospective top movies of 2022. And I think within the past couple days, either yesterday or 2 days ago, they put out the Oscar nominations, the full list.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to let's just talk about the best picture nominees. I want to run these down real quick and then tell me your thoughts. I've only seen two of these movies. I look forward to, I always try to see all of them. I usually end up seeing like eight of them. So I look forward to watching these in the next couple of weeks. But we got All Quiet on the Western Front.
Haven't seen it.
Avatar 2 by James Cameron. Ever heard of him?
Haven't seen
Banshees of Inisherin.
Want to see it.
Elvis. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Seen it.
The Fablemans.
Seen it.
Tar.
Great movie. Haven't seen it.
Top Gun.
Haven't seen it.
Triangle of Sadness.
Want to see it.
And Women Talking.
Want to see it.
What do you think?
I mean, you already plugged my YouTube channel. I mean, my top three movies were Nope, Fablemans, and Bones and All. And I kind of feel like Bones and All got snubbed, and the Oscars love to do this because anything that's even slightly horror, they just don't fuck with, and it pisses me off so much because I feel like as a huge horror fan, I just think those are the best movies ever made. Like a lot of them are like horror movies are like the best, some of the best movies ever made. So I'm not upset though. It's a very Oscars. These are a very Oscars choices.
I disagree because they usually in the past decade, they don't reward big blockbusters and they put Top Gun and Avatar 2 in there.
It's varied in that way. But I don't necessarily, I'm not giving them any credit for that.
I've only seen two of these movies, so I can't speak on it, but I look forward to
you know what? These. I've heard Top Gun is great.
Me too.
I've heard it's great.
What you said about horror is, I mean, objectively true if you look through the nominees over the years. Why does Del Toro get a pass on that, though? Nightmare Alley got nominated just last year.
I feel like I'd probably move into some conjecture that's probably going to sound conspiratorial, but I think it's just because the Academy is run by normal, like people in Hollywood. You know, I think Spielberg was on the Academy at some point if he wasn't already. I think that it's just like there are people making these decisions who like, I think that it's skewed a little bit and it's not, I'm not going to go so far to say that it's like a fraternity and they're like, or a sorority or both, and they're just like choosing their friends. But it feels like that a lot of the time. Like, dude, no one, like All Quiet on the Western Front, fucking war movie. Like, dude, I haven't seen it. It's probably great. There's always, war movies are just always fodder for the Oscars, but I don't know. I could go on about it.
I think the nomination's getting better and better because they've expanded the voting pool. I think now it's like close to 10,000 people.
Yeah.
So we're moving out of that kind of incestuous phase where it's just like a lot of schmoozing. If you look at the past couple of winners, Parasite, Nomadland, and Coda, those were three of the best movies.
Yeah.
You know, you're not getting like Green Book winning anymore. Argo's a good movie, but like, was it the best movie that year? Probably not.
Absolutely not. I don't fucking care about Avatar. I'm probably not gonna watch it. I'm sorry, Jim. Like, I think you're a great director. Love Aliens, but I just don't care about that. I don't care about it. Like, I'm sure there'll come
a
time.
I don't either. That and Elvis. I'll probably watch all the other movies except for those two.
I actually would recommend Elvis. I think it's a good movie.
Really? Man, I got no desire to see it.
It is surprisingly very entertaining. I mean, it's Baz Luhrmann, and I think Austin Butler's really good in it. I think he's a little overhyped, but I think he's good in it. And I think, I mean, that's another, Elvis, come on, man. Like, fucking everybody blew their load for that movie just because it was Elvis. So like, I'm not surprised that's up there. But what I do like is I do think that movies that are blockbusters deserve a chance to be considered, because if millions and billions of people go see a movie, there's something working about it, whether it's a spectacle or not. You know, I think a lot about like Scorsese calling the Marvel movies like roller coasters. I think they are, but I don't think that it discredits them as being movies. As much as as the pretentious part of me hates that I'm saying that, I think it's unfair because so many people fucking love Doctor Strange. Like, there's a joke in one of my videos where I kind of say that Doctor Strange is my number one choice, because if you know me, I'm not a big Marvel guy, and like the movies at least. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's an exciting year. I think Brendan Fraser is going to get Best Actor. Angela Bassett will probably get Best Actress, but I want it to go to, and I should know her name, the woman in Everything Everywhere All at Once. She is so good.
The daughter?
Yeah, it wasn't on my top five movies, but it's a good movie. I think that's another one that's kind of overhyped, but I did like it.
I mean, it was my favorite movie of the year so far. I need to watch more. In the past 10 years, Jake, there's been two superhero movies nominated for Best Picture. Can you guess what they are? In the past decade, since 2013.
I know Logan got Best Adapted Screenplay, but I don't know if it got Best Oscar.
It is not one of them.
I don't know. I just know Black Panther and...
Mm-hmm. That's one of them.
Unless it's... is it Black Panther 2 didn't get nominated, so...
Nope.
I don't know. What's the other one? Unbreakable?
No, that's from like 2000.
Yeah, I was...
Joker.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Joker. Yeah. I think Corey Birdman, Lucas definitely stole the vote on that one. I think he just voted all 10,000 for the Joker.
Yeah. I mean, Birdman got nominated in one, and I guess technically there was a superhero, but...
Fuck. That movie's so good. I gotta rewatch that. Talk about a panic attack in fucking slow motion. God, love that movie. Michael Keaton, kidding me?
I'm very excited to see Tar. I think I'm going to love that movie.
I'm excited to see that one. I'll definitely see that one.
And The Fablemans.
Banshees of Inisherin is definitely on my... I've got that pretty strongly on my radar. It's funny, for someone...
Great movie. You're going to love it.
For someone who's
got
doing...
A lot of,
go ahead, sorry.
It's got a lot of... Paul Thomas Anderson vibes. It says a lot about just like dumb aspects of masculinity, men not being able to deal with stuff.
I'm very excited to watch it.
And it's very funny. It's like legitimately really funny. I did not expect it to be as comedic as it was.
Colin Farrell really taking some cool roles recently. Can't wait to see. I feel like that Penguin show is coming out this year too.
I feel like he should win Best Actor.
Yeah.
It was a really great performance.
I think Brendan Fraser will get it, but just because that feels the best, you know?
Yeah, I haven't seen The Whale either. I'll see it eventually because I love his movies, but I just know it's going to be so sad.
All I know is there's a really uncomfortable scene right in the beginning of the movie that I personally can't wait to watch because I love shit like that, but it's going to probably be pretty soul-crushing.
Yeah.
So let's take it home. No More Shall We Fart, 2023.
No More Shall We Fart. The song is Hallelujah. The year is 2001.
This year is 2023. And if you want to hear more, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, follow, like, subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rating. It really helps us out. Comment. Leave comments. Fucking leave reviews. It helps us. It's all we ask for all this free content that is coming into your ear holes. Follow us at Jubilee Street Pod on Instagram. If you want to email us, jubileestreetpod@gmail.com. Until next time, you should have taken it as a warning. Follow us on Instagram.
Peace.